The scenes in cities across America over the last several days have reminded some people of the tension and unrest that occurred in the late 1960s, when riots and violence erupted in cities and left a mark on them for decades. Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University and joins us now. Julian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And not everyone thinks comparing 2020 to 1967-68 is accurate. What do you think?
Well, I think it's fair. I think there are certain recurring issues that we saw in 68 and we're seeing in 220, like institutional racism and the politics of that issue, street protest, as well as politicians capitalizing on a white backlash. I would argue, and I have, that it's actually worse today in many ways because of the pandemic and the instability in the White House. But I think there's a lot of lessons to be drawn from that period.
All right, well, take us back to the summer of 1967 when riots broke out in Newark and Detroit and more than 150 cities around the country. And then in 68, when riots erupted again after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, what was going on to spark all of that?
Well, Lyndon Johnson, the president, actually put together a commission, the Kerner Commission, that asked that exact question. What was going on in 1967? And what they found that in each of these cities, there were certain chronic problems such as unemployment and a lack of opportunity that had been building frustration in these areas. But ultimately, one of the biggest issues was policing. And police interaction with African Americans was a source of frustration. And many residents felt they were constantly being harassed and attacked by the people meant to protect them. And often it was an arrest that sparked the riots. That's exactly what happened in Detroit and Michigan and New York.
Well, and in July of 1967, President Johnson gave a televised address to the country and said federal troops and police action cannot create lasting peace in our cities. Listen.
The only genuine long-range solution for what has happened lies in an attack mounted at every level upon the conditions that breed despair and breed violence.
Now, in that address, he began talking about restoring order, but went on to talk about the problems causing the riots. What was the political response to the tension and the anger erupting across the country?
Well, the political response worked against Lyndon Johnson. It moved the country to the right. Republicans and Southern Democrats and more conservative Northern Democrats. In both parties, many politicians capitalized on the anger that emerged toward the rioting. It became a way to talk about why civil rights legislation wasn't working or why the war on poverty wasn't working. And it became a really important talking point for conservatives, meaning the riots, in the buildup to the 1968 election. So Johnson was frustrated, not just because they were happening, but he understood it was totally eroding his political support for the kinds of domestic programs he still wanted to pass.
And Johnson did not run for re-election in 1968, in part because of what was going on with the Vietnam War, as we've talked about. But Richard Nixon did win that election. And I want to listen to what he said when he was giving his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention in 1968.
When the nation with the greatest tradition of the rule of law is plagued by unprecedented lawlessness, when a nation has been known for centuries for equality of opportunity is torn by unprecedented racial violence, and when the President of the United States cannot travel abroad or to any major city at home without fear of a hostile demonstration, then it's time for new leadership for the United States of America.
Now, that will probably remind people right now of what President Trump has been saying about law and order. Do you see a connection there between Trump saying law and order and Richard Nixon winning in part on a campaign of restoring law and order?
It was very important to Richard Nixon's campaign, talking about law and order, appealing to the silent majority, which is a term that President Trump tweeted out, was a way to unite his coalition and to paint progressive movements that had been fighting for social rights throughout the 1960s as extremists and as a danger to the country more broadly. It worked very well for Nixon in 68. It was essential to his victory. Trump has a different challenge because he's president. He's not an outsider. He's actually the one in charge. So if there's no law and order, he's responsible for the breakdown of law and order, and that's what you're going to hear from Democrats. But it is a powerful argument, and I think it might be one of the defining themes that we hear in the Republican campaign for 2020.
Well, and we've already heard more of it from President Trump just in the last day. Let's listen here. He called for governors to crack down more severely on protesters and looters. Here he is yesterday on a conference call with the governors, this sound courtesy of The Washington Post.
And a lot of men, we have all the men and women that you need, but people aren't calling them up. You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks.
That was the president talking to the governors. Now, he did announce yesterday that he's going to use the Insurrection Act of 1807 to allow the military to be used on U.S. soil to quell some of these protests. What are your thoughts on that as an historian?
Well, I think we're reaching a pretty dangerous point. I think there's ways in which he can use that in this situation, and I think he will do that. We've seen it invoked several times, including after the acquittal of the police who attacked Rodney King. It's controversial. Many governors won't want him to do this. The biggest danger is that he does this and it leads to bloody confrontations and it sparks more disorder in the country. But I think that's the direction he is going in terms of invoking executive authority in this way. We'll see. We'll see what the governors do. We'll see what kind of challenges mount. That's the kind of signals he's sending.
Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic nominee, addressed the situation in a speech today in Philadelphia. Let's listen.
It's been our purpose from the very beginning to become a nation where all men and women are not only created equal, but they're treated equally. Not just created equal, but treated equally. To become a nation defined in Dr. King's words, not only by the absence of tension, but by the presence of justice.
Julian, what do you make of Biden's message at this moment? He is 77 years old. He, of course, remembers the civil rights struggles of the 1960s very well.
I think it's a good message, and I think it's one that Democrats would do well to focus on, meaning rather than talking about riots and disorder, focus on the issues that are at the heart of the protest and mostly peaceful protest, criminal justice and racial equality, and the idea that an African-American should not be scared to walk the streets and scared of being killed at the hands of a police officer for not doing anything. And I think Democrats should play to hope, even if President Trump is playing to fear. That's the other legacy of the 1960s. It was the Johnson of 1964 and 65 that said the federal government must address racial inequality and injustice rather than run away from it.
Julian, let me just finally go back to where we started, comparing what's happening now to what happened in the 1960s. Now, we mentioned Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed in April of 68. Just 2 months later, Bobby Kennedy was shot and killed. How do you make sense of the divisions now? Are we as divided of a nation as we were then?
Well, yeah, I think over these questions of institutional racism, they were never resolved. And so the divisions that unfolded in the 60s about these questions continue through today, because after desegregation and after voting rights, we never really tackled these other kinds of questions, such as policing and criminal justice. So we're still divided over the issues opened up in the 60s. But layered over that, we're just more politically polarized today. The parties are farther apart, not just on big issues, but on the most minor issues. So the added challenge now is finding any possibility for bipartisan action in Washington. And that's what makes the fault lines of 220 so much scarier in some ways than what they were in 68 when they were already pretty bad.
Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.